Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Now we speak into the atmosphere and we say, let there be light. This month we're talking about transformational consciousness and using the model of Jesus' first miracle of turning the water into wine. You see this kind of throughout Jesus' ministry where he really didn't create something out of nothing. He creates something out of something else. He doesn't create food to feed the 5,000. He multiplies loaves and fish. He says, it's such a powerful statement when the disciples come to him and they say, the people are hungry, we don't have anything to feed them. And Jesus says, well, what do we have? That's seeing the glass half full. Not, oh my God, there's thousands of people here who are waiting for us to serve them. He says, well, what do we have? That's, you got to keep that in your vocabulary. Not, what didn't we get this month, but what do we have? I could say, oh man, 1,000 people didn't show up today. Or I could say, look at all these beautiful people. They don't even live close here necessarily. And they all drove here today as they do every Sunday. That's what I have. And the more you celebrate what you have, the more it blesses you. The more it multiplies. So there's a whole piece about the turning water into wine that we've already gone through. I won't go back to John chapter 2 because I've got other scriptures to show you. But it's the whole thing about how water is necessary. Water is a good thing. You need water. You can't live without water. It's just that water was not what was necessary at that wedding. And so it wasn't that the water was bad, it's that the water wasn't appropriate. And we talked last week about, or week before last actually, about changing the way you think about things so that their manifestation in your life changes. And I won't bore you with the details of it again, but it's still kind of miraculous for me that I've been dealing with this tinnitus, tomato, tomato, I don't know exactly how you pronounce it. But you can go back to from 2 weeks ago and see what I said about it. But it wasn't that it went away, it's that I got new information about it and changed the way I thought about it, and now it's felt like it's gone away. And I went from just being tormented by it to now maybe I think about it every fourth or fifth day for a few minutes. Like, oh yeah, I forgot. And it's like it's not even, it was just the rearranging of the thought. It may be getting better. I can't tell. But I think it's because I changed the way that I thought about it that the appearance of it is that it's getting better. And I think there's a real life lesson in that for a lot of us. I think many of you can relate to that. This is what I want to show you, and I've used this, gosh, so many times, but nothing makes my point better than this. This is Matthew chapter 6, verse 22 and 23. This is where in the King James it says, if your eye be single, your whole body be filled with light. I love the way it says it in the Koboris manuscript, which, as you know, the Koboris is an ancient text, possibly the oldest language that there is. It's the language that Jesus spoke. And in that translation, he says, the light for your earthly life is perception. What I liked about it is that the Aramaic language sort of allows for the concept of perception even more than the Greek language does, certainly more than English does. He says, therefore, if your perception is without fault, your whole life shall be enlightened. That's the observer effect. That's quantum physics. That's your reality is what you see your reality is. And you could back that up with scripture, you know. Jesus, God, Jesus, the world, the other voice is coming into people all saying, what do you see? What do you see? Can these bones live again? Who do men say that I am? So many times God's posing a question and asking, what do you see? What do you see? What do you see? He says, if your perception be evil, your whole body shall be darkened by it. And I love that he uses the word become here. It says, if the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? The implication being that darkness isn't static. You can spiral down into darkness. Just like you can walk more and more into the light, you can walk more and more into the darkness. And that's why when you see, I know with myself, I can't honestly tell you that every thought that goes through my head is positive and optimistic and full of faith. That would not be true. But I can tell you what is true. If I see that I've been on an arc for several hours of something that's negative or making me feel self-pity or whatever, I have learned now, like, wow, this is dangerous. I've got to arrest this, because it may be harmless right now, but if I let this, for lack of a better term, cancer stay in my thought processes, this is going to take me to a very dark place, and I'm the only one that can change it. I have to change it. I either change it through gratitude or just any number of ways, spiritually, physically, emotionally. You know, you learn the things that work for you. And most of the biblical superstars got this. David understood it. David understood how to encourage himself in the Lord. David probably, if he lived in the modern world, would be called bipolar. Jeremiah certainly would be. And David kind of learned without medication. I'm not anti-medication, but without medication, he learned to encourage himself in the Lord. When he saw himself going into the hole, he learned how to pull himself out of it. Like, no, this is, why are you cast down on my soul? And why are you disquieted within me? And hope thou in God, for I shall yet praise him, who is the help of my countenance. Or bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that's within me, bless his holy name. Forget not his benefits. That's a real important one. Whether you call it counting your blessings or whatever, you can be so in the middle of blessings that you really kind of take them for granted. And let me tell you something, counting your blessings does not mean everything's perfect in your life. Everything's not so either or, black or white. Stop eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Eat from the tree of life. Blessings are in the middle of some trials. And as a matter of fact, it's the blessings that, it's the observation and recognition and appreciation of the blessings that get you through the bad stuff. Then I want to show you, there's this one little phrase. I love some of these off-the-cuff phrases that Jesus would use that just kind of stay in my consciousness. And Paul said this, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 23, in the New King James, he says this in the middle of a whole thing he's writing to the Ephesians. He says, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind. I don't know why, but I find that very compelling, because he says your mind has a spirit, your mind has an attitude. There's, it's not just thinking a thought that changes things, it's the way you think. Until you address the way that you think. Like, for instance, if you feel like you're victimized by the universe, you're not only going to attract more things that make you feel victimized, you're going to see things that may not be negative, you're going to see them as negative. When your feeling is, oh, dear God, what now? What now? That's all I need right now. Well, that's just the cherry on the cake of my day. If you're, and I've done it too, but if you're on that trajectory, you've got to do a U-turn. Because when you start getting a list like that, oh, here's another bad thing that happened, and here's another thing, and another thing. I've been talking about the power of the list for years, but the list can work for you positive or negative. Classic example of it working in the positive is David saying, the Lord deliver me from a lion, the Lord deliver me from a bear. And it was the power of that, it was the energy of remembering those things that made him say, so I believe I can fight this Philistine. Some people just the opposite. Can you believe this? I've been attacked by a bear and a lion, and now a giant's after me. Everybody's after me. And you could see it two different ways. Is the glass half full, the glass half empty? Yes. But both things, they're both true. They're alternate realities that are coexisting. This is why, look, until you understand this, arguing with people that don't see your point, it's just going to frustrate you, because they don't see the world that you see. They don't see the reality that you see. And sometimes if you see a certain reality, even about your own life, you've ever had try to be positive about something and somebody gets mad because you're positive or you're not taking your situation serious enough. And it's like, wow, misery really does love company, doesn't it? Like, you know, why do you even care if I'm being positive? But it's because your perception is aggravating them or convicting them about their perception. And that's why I think it was a couple of weeks ago I was talking about even when you pray with somebody, agree with them, you kind of have to locate where they are. Because if not, you'll impose your idea. Remember I told you, like, I was at that church, big church in Nashville, and nobody knew me there, and the guy had an altar call for that had to do with what he was talking about. And if I remember, I think it was even talking about people who were in the ministry that were under a lot of stress or whatever. It was very applicable to me at the time. And I thought, well, I'm going to go get prayed for. I never get this opportunity, so I'm going to go do it. And I left the balcony, walked all the way down the aisle, and this guy is trying to get me saved. And I just could not get him off of that track. You know, you've got to believe in your heart God raised Jesus from the dead. Confess, you know, repeat this prayer after me. And I said, no, I'm saved. I love Jesus. I was here because of what he talked about. It's like he didn't even hear the sermon. He was going to close that deal, and, you know, he was in counselor mode. And it aggravated me. I just thought, you know what, thank you very much. I'm saved. Jesus is Lord. Are you happy? And, you know, really all I wanted, I didn't even need counseling. I just wanted somebody to, you know, while those words were still in the air, I wanted somebody to say, we agree for you and that whatever you're going through in your ministry, God's got you or whatever. That's all I needed. It's very important to understand why would Jesus ask a blind man, what do you want? You know, we would look at it and go, he wants to see. Don't assume so. Anyway, this is the same little passage out of the Jonathan Mitchell, and it's wordy, but I love the kind of the shades of meaning he shows here. He says, and then to be continuously renewed or from time to time or progressively made young again. What? Do you realize your thoughts can age you prematurely? Made young again by or in or with the spirit or attitude or breath effect of your mind or from the mind which is you. Isn't that interesting? You are your mind. Your physical body is a manifestation of the unseen part of you. It's the manifestation of your spirit and your soul. That's why things that are not resolved on the inside. So I'm not saying all disease comes from this, because some things are viral or hereditary, whatever. But a lot of things are manifestations of something that's not right inside of you. It's why it's called dis-ease. It's disease. And, you know, we all know that, but we have to be reminded of it. I mean, even to the point, I don't want to ever put anybody on the spot and make you feel like, oh, I'm afraid to tell somebody I'm sick because somebody will go, what's going on with you? That's not why I'm saying it. I'm saying, like, for me, if something goes on with me, like if I start feeling my glands getting swollen or I will think, what's going on? And I can nearly always trace it back to, oh, yeah, yesterday afternoon, words were spoken that kind of made me feel yucky, either by me or to me or about me or whatever. And I let it get inside. And it's not dangerous if you pluck it out quickly. It's when you leave it in there, that's when it's dangerous to leave things unchecked. I've shared this with you a bunch of times, but it made such an impression on me. Ministering in Mexico years ago, we went to pray for this little girl that I've never seen anything more shocking and horrible. She had a tumor that was like, she looked like she had two heads. Like the tumor was the size of another head, and she weighed 40 or 50 pounds. She wanted to be baptized because she was clearly about to die, and I'm sure she did. But I asked what happened with her. It was from a cavity. She lived in a very poor village that didn't have good dental health. a cavity left unchecked, a tooth was not extracted, became abscessed, and over a matter of time, it killed her. Like you, like if you go to the dentist and he says you got a cavity, you don't like, oh my God! It's not like you get on, you don't go, I was diagnosed with a, you know, people are like, well, get a feeling. You know, what's the deal? but that's because you have a way to deal with it. If you're in a situation where, well, you know, even the scripture says that it's the little foxes that spoil the vine. And it's rarely the big things in your life that take you down. It's usually little things that are left unchecked, little slights, little hurts, little whatever. You know, at a certain point, I know I've had to have this conversation. Even yesterday, I was going to say I've had to have this conversation with myself. Yesterday, somebody inboxed me that I don't even really talk to. But they inboxed me and they said, I just want you to know I posted something on Facebook and I was unfriended by some people and kind of attacked for taking a stand. And it made me think of you, some of the things you've been through over the last however many they perceived my life. And they said, I don't know how you did it. And for a minute I thought, yeah, how did you know, it was kind of bad there for a while. And I just said, look, just stand up for what you believe is right and stay strong and you'll get through it. But I thought, wow, I really have come a long way. And I have learned now, and it's, you know, this is why I like this idea of the spirit of your mind, the attitude of your mind, training your mind. Because I'm not there 100%, but I would say I'm there about 85 to 90%. If somebody says something that is just not true about me, I now go, this really is your problem. It's not mine. And it's so not my problem that I'm not even going to take offense to it. I don't even have to try to forgive you for it because I don't even take it seriously. I understand that in your reality, that's how you see things. And I know everybody's joking a lot about these days or talking a lot about alternative facts, whatever. But there is kind of a truth to that. There's everybody really sort of does operate under alternative facts. I'm not saying there isn't truth, but whatever is your reality, and that's how you see it. You know, I honestly haven't heard this in years, but back when the church was really big and growing and affecting the community a lot, I would hear, once in a while, hear somebody say, I think they're a cult or whatever, and it just really would bother me because I was like, I'm so not a cult leader. Like, cult leaders follow you home and harass you and get all your information. I don't even know your name. You know what I mean? Like, you leave the church, I can't remember you 2 weeks because I'm so the opposite. And I think, come up with it. Of course, then I found out cult leader kind of has a positive. It means counterculture and someone has a cult following. So there's a whole positive spin on it. Now I just think, yeah, I'm sure in your little fundamentalist religious paradigm, that is probably what I am. To you, that is how you would interpret somebody like me. So there's no point in me even trying to explain to you my point of view because you're never going to see the scriptures or Jesus or the church or spirituality. You're not going to see it the way I see it anyway. So this is your problem. You got to work through it. Sorry that you don't see things clearer. Really ticks people off when they're wanting to get you upset. And you go, you know what? I don't even have to forgive you because you're so wrong. I mean, you could tell me that grass is purple out there, but it's green. And I'm not even going to be offended that you're so mad that you know, that I don't see it as purple. But I'm telling you, it's green. Mom, if you're streaming, I was going to tell the story about the green walls in Macon, but I think I'll save that one. It's a tragically funny story. Well, now I've got to tell you. Somewhere, we must have been out somewhere, and I had publicly disputed my mom's word in front of some church members. Whatever she said, So I remember as I was, I won't act it out, but as I was, this was back in the days of corporal punishment, and as I was getting mine, I remember it was in the living room of that parsonage we lived in when Dad pastored in Macon, and I remember the walls were kind of a mint green, a pale green. And so mom goes, if I tell you that wall is black, then that wall is black. So she says, what color is that wall? Well, it was green. And so I said, it's green. Well, she thought I was being a smart aleck. And she's like, oh, you know. And so I didn't know the right answer. I'm like, I don't know. It's mint green. It's pale green. It's, I don't know. What's the color? I'm trying to go through the Crayolas. And my, like, what is it? Is it, what's that kind of, it's, yeah, wintergreen. What's the one I'm trying to think of? What's the one that's like yellowish green? It's what we paint. Yeah, sure. Like, I don't know. Is it chartreuse? I don't know. Finally, I was like, oh, you want me to say it's black? Okay, it's black. It's, now we laugh about it because I thought, why are you hitting me? That wall is clearly green, lady. I don't know. Thanks. We'll see you tonight. Anyway, let's go on. This is... Eckhart Tolle makes this, I think this is a good quote. It says, if your mind carries a heavy burden of past, you will experience more of the same. The past perpetuates itself through lack of presence. The quality of your consciousness at this moment is what shapes the future. I mean, I've said this to you in other ways, and I've showed you other quotes. That is such a truth that is running so many people's lives, and they don't even realize it. They don't even realize that they're on a treadmill. They're on a cycle. They're in a rut. They're just a thing happens, so they see it, then they say it, and they make the same thing happen over and over again. That's why, you know, it's not a word that you hear a lot in our circles, but the word repentance, it means, it's Greek metaneo, change your life by changing your mind. It means I've got to interject a new thought here because this same, let me tell you this, for the most part, if the same thing keeps happening in your life, if you see a pattern in your life, you're probably causing it. And it's so hard to accept that. But until you can accept that, you'll never get out of the cycle. At a certain point, you have to say, oh, I think I'm making this happen. I can tell you this. Who did I just talk to about this the other day? We were talking about being post-spiritual warfare. And we both had the same experience. I said, you know, since I opted out of that system, I have no demonic attack now. It's amazing how, I mean, if you want to argue with me about the reality of demons or whatever, that's fine. I mean, there are clearly things in the world that are inexplicable to me. So I'm not ruling out that there is disembodied spirits or whatever. I'm not saying that doesn't exist. I'm saying in my world, Jesus said, Satan has come to me, but it's nothing in me. In other words, there's no point in getting something started because I don't have any, I just don't connect with you. So whether you want to, if you want to argue with me whether the devil is real, whether he's not real, whether he's a fallen angel or whatever, fine, whatever, you know, you got scripture, well, whatever point you want to make, you can make your point. I'm just saying for me, he's a non-issue. It is a non-issue because I'm just out of that system. It's like Microsoft versus Mac. It's like, it's a complete, it's just a different system. And, but buddy, when you're in it, when you are looking for demons behind every tree, You'll get some demons going. I mean, you'll make some stuff happen. Even Bishop Pearson tells a very interesting story, and I so understood what he meant by this. But he was talking about a time that he took a woman through deliverance and what happened with it. And he said, I realize now I was speaking it into existence. It's like I kind of created the whole scenario by the words of my mouth because I thought I was doing the right thing. And because she was on that same sort of path with me, he said, we weren't trying to fake anything, but we created another reality that I don't think would have ever happened if I hadn't set us up for that. I'm not explaining it as well as he did, but it really resonated with me. And you know how when we've talked before about the power of agreement, when somebody, even if somebody says something to you, like I was thinking about it this week, Remember when Jesus confronts the Pharisees and he says, there's no pleasing you guys. He said, you know, John the Baptist was a hermit and he lived out in the wilderness. So you said he was demon possessed. He said, I was just the opposite. I was very social, very gregarious. I accepted every invitation, every party, which is just the opposite of that. And you said I had a demon and that I was an alcoholic. And basically what he was saying is people are going to see and say what is their reality. You have to decide if you're going to agree with it or not. And that's when somebody says something to you, you have to decide, am I going to accept this or not? And if you agree with it, then it does become true for you. Anyway, I could say more about that, but it'll get too personal. Let me go to the next one. By this person with a long last name. This is very interesting because this person is a neurologist, and they have a very interesting take on the mind here. He says, how can a 3-pound mass of jelly that you can hold in your palm imagine angels, contemplate the meaning of infinity, and even question its own place in the cosmos? Talking about your brain. Especially awe-inspiring is the fact that any single brain, including yours, is made up of atoms that were forged in the hearts of countless far-flung stars billions of years ago. These particles drifted for eons. Michelle, that's a very nice effect. As I'm reading that, the particles. You better go, girl. I didn't miss it. As I'm saying, I'm like, look, the particles are actually. Wow, that's really good. These particles drifted for eons and light years until gravity and change brought them together here and now. These atoms now form a conglomerate, your brain, that can not only ponder the very stars that gave it birth, but can also think about its own ability to think and wonder about its own ability to wonder. With the arrival of humans, it has been said, the universe has suddenly become conscious of itself. This truly is the greatest mystery of all. Isn't that awesome? Isn't it? That's one of the most powerful things I've ever read. And the special effects help. But I love this. We were yesterday, Ken's son Brandon and his girlfriend Christian, they wanted to come down to the aquarium. And it worked out great for us. It was another synchronistic thing because we were going to be gone yesterday, but we decided to stay. And I was so great, so glad that we did because we had such a good time with them and they're such sweet kids. And so we went to the aquarium. We live across the street from the aquarium, but he'd never been there. And they have trained sea lions that come out and they do a show. And it's amazing that they can, I think, how would you even start? And these are not animals that were born in captivity. These are like sea lions that they found injured somewhere. One of them had been shot in the head. One had fish hooks all in him. It's really tragic stuff. And they're like really healthy now. And they were doing stuff I couldn't do. And one of them, the biggest one, he would stand on his flippers and put his back flippers up and clap them. And they, you know, when they'd say wave to everybody, they would wave. And and of course they're doing it for the cause and effect. They're getting fish. They eat like 300 pounds a day of fish. But I thought, it's amazing how their brains work. And why is it that some animals can be trained like that and others can't be? And I don't know, I was thinking a whole lot about how the brain works anyway. And I'm not trying to equate us with trained seals or trained sea lions. But we are trained to respond to things a certain way. Church is notorious for training people to respond a certain way. And you learn how to manipulate them with guilt. That's why Metron is still somewhat of an experiment in process. And I don't have the full vision yet of all it will become. But I can tell you this, it's amazing that we've created something here that is financially solvent without any, there's no threat. Nobody yells at you. I don't think I've ever even used the word tithing here once in 3 years. It's just that you believe in what we're doing and you support it. And amazing. I mean, I don't know if you realize how amazing that is. I can't tell you the pastors that told me a few years ago, dude, you better stop preaching that no hell stuff. He said, it'll affect your giving. People can't, you know, if they're not afraid, they won't give. And I thought, man, that's really depressing. That's how you, and it worked for them. I mean, they're driving nice cars and got private planes or whatever. I'm like, wow, believe me, there was a few times when we were in the big building, I'd consider bringing it all back. I thought, I'm bringing the rapture back. I'm bringing hell back. We got to get this money up here. I'm going to threaten some people. Tree's going to fall on your house if you don't give. But I've learned better. This is, do not be mad. I was an idiot when I said this. When I first started the church, I was young, and there was it was like our first meeting that we ever had, and I think Jensen Franklin was coming to speak, and I really needed the crowd to be big, and I said, I really want y'all to come. I said, don't make me say, do not be mad that I said this. I said, don't make me say your dog's going to die if you don't come, because somebody didn't come and their dog died, and they blamed me for it. They said I killed their dog. And I said, no, I was just joking. And I learned, don't mess with dog lovers. Lesson learned at age 26. I mean, to this day, they don't speak to me because they think I killed their dog. So maybe I did. I didn't mean to. I was trying to be ironic. I said, don't make me say your dog. Now I'm just like, you know, let's not use that one again. But that's my point. Like, I used to feel like, well, you've got to threaten them to make them do right. And I abandoned that a long time ago, and now I don't even remember how to get back there. You know, it's like that's not even in my consciousness now. Anyway, that's a great quote, and I love tapping into the knowledge of not only the spiritual ideas, but the neurological, and it's fascinating to understand how the brain works. And I think, at least my experience with Christians was that Christians were notorious in the past for not caring about anything about the mind. Everything was about the spirit. You know, as a matter of fact, I was discouraged in Bible college from even talking about the mind too much, because you didn't want to take people to too cerebral a place. Like, you know, we are spiritual beings, so don't get psychological in your teaching. And now I think just the opposite. I think, no, it's important to understand why you think like you think. You know, and sometimes it takes a psychologist or a therapist or somebody from that, you know, from that way of thinking to explain to you, this is why you think the way you do. They're not always right, but a lot of times they can give you a key that really changes things for you. Terrence McKenna, I can pronounce that one, says, this is a good quote, I like this. You are an explorer, and you represent our species, and the greatest good you can do is to bring back a new idea, because our world is endangered by the absence of good ideas. Our world is in crisis because of the absence of consciousness. I really like the energy on that, because what it's saying is go into unknown areas and find a new way to think in your own life. Something as simple today, there's a way we nearly always drive here on Sundays. And this is happening to both of us. We must have our phone on some setting with the GPS in it, because when I get in the car, it will tell me, my phone will suggest where I'm going. And on Sundays, it tells me to come here, which is a little weird. You know what I mean? It's like, excuse me, phone. But I guess it picks up that this is where, that's the way we drive on Sundays. Y'all do it too. It's really kind of like, I know. It'd be one thing if you were leaving someplace and it tells you how long it is to get to home. I would get that. But like, why just on one day of the week you tell me how to come to Monroe Drive? So we were, he didn't mean to do it, but he was in a different lane today that normally we get on the expressway. And I said, do you remember it's Sunday? And he said, yeah. And I said, you know what? It's fine. Let's go a different way today. And even just something as simple as that, like, you know, yeah, it was better just to tell my brain and my smartphone, we may be going to Monroe Drive, we may not be. You don't tell me what to do, Surrey, or whoever you are in that phone. But I know that seems like a small thing, but sometimes, as much as I like predictability, there's a certain, you know, there are certain things that, like, there's some restaurants that I go to that I've ordered the same thing for years every time I go there because I like that thing. And I don't want to order something else just for variety, saying, oh, why didn't I get the thing I like? That's what I go to that place for, that thing. But you have to watch yourself from becoming too predictable, too patterned. Like, I could tell, like, even this week, I've had to embrace a new Starbucks now because the one I was going to is not available right now because they're building a new one. And I like my baristas that know how I like it. Because I order the exact same thing every day. When I go in this week, there's like all new baristas. I'm like, oh. Because they misunderstand what I'm saying. Venti iced coffee, extra ice, milk, and two Splendas. Does that mean extra milk? No. That's extra ice and a couple of Splendas. How many? Well, a couple is two. Like if you see two people, they're a cute couple. That means there's two of them. And I'm trying not to be sarcastic, but, you know, what's your name? Jim. What? It's one syllable, Jim. Jam. Jam. Oh, and I've got to get a grip because these little baristas are really, because they're not doing it right. I like when I walk in and Shamia makes my coffee like I like it. And she says, hi, Jim. I'm like, hey, Shamia, what's up? And that, like, that's a good day. I like a place that you can go and always have the usual. That's good. However, sometimes it is good to break out of your rut and just make your brain embrace a new idea. Not too much. Because I do like my coffee the way I like it. Don't misunderstand me. Does that mean ekno? And I have to say it that way. I have to say it in that sequence. What was funny is one day I was in there and I like a lot of ice. And people think, a lot of times they think, you know, that you're the opposite because you want more drink for your money. It's a bad habit, but I'm a bit of an ice cruncher. And to the dismay of my dentist. But one of the girls in there actually showed the new girl, she says, no, this is the way he likes it. Because they know I'm always going to go back and say, would you put one more scoop of ice in there? And she says, just go ahead and do it now because he's going to come back and ask you. I'm like, thank you. Thank you for understanding me. Because to me, if there's not a lot of ice in it, it doesn't look fresh. I like it. I like fresh iced coffee, you know. If there's a little bit of ice, it looks like it's watered down. I'm like, ew. Can I get one more scoop of ice, please? You know, he sees me do it all the time. I'm just always standing there waiting. Excuse me. Sorry to bother you. Could you give me the extra ice that I asked for? Thank you. Aren't you glad to know that about me? And I'm going to end with this. This is such a beautiful passage. And I'd like you to, I know you're familiar with it, but I'd like you to, before you go today, kind of hear this with some new ears. This is Isaiah 55, and this is out of the Message. This is where he says, my thoughts are not your thoughts, or my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. Look what he says here. He says, I don't think the way you think. The way you work isn't the way I work, God's decree. Even something as simple as, I know Jonah sang Spirit in the Sky today because that's one of my favorite songs, but that's a cool song. Now, some people would hear that and say, well, I don't want to sing a song about dying. Well, we're not talking about dying right now, but what we're saying is there's an afterlife, and whenever that does happen, there's something even greater. That's not a depressing idea. That's a great idea. That's like singing I'll Fly Away or whatever. And the scripture says, precious in the sight of the Lord are the death of his saints. You know, we, if we're on this side, we miss a loved one when they cross over. The people on the other side and God look at it very differently. It's somebody coming home. He says, for as the sky soars high above earth, so the way I work surpasses the way you work, and the way I think is beyond the way you think. Just as rain and snow descend from the skies and don't go back until they've watered the earth, doing their work of making things grow and blossom, producing seed for farmers and food for the hungry, so will the words that come out of my mouth not come back empty-handed. This is where the King James says the word will not return void. They'll do the work I sent them to do. They'll complete the assignment I gave them. So you'll go out in joy. You'll be led into a whole and complete life. Isn't that beautiful? The mountains and hills will lead the parade, bursting with song. All the trees of the forest will join the procession, exuberant with applause. Why? Because you're thinking a different way. God's saying, come up to a higher consciousness. Come up to a higher way of thinking. And that's what will cause the mountains to break forth into singing. No more thistles, but giant sequoias. No more thorn bushes, but stately pines. Monuments to me, to God, living and lasting evidence of God. What that's saying is, and I hear this in a very different way than I heard it years ago when I started preaching. To me, what this says is, if you want to change your reality, elevate your thinking to the way God would think about things. And God's not disappointed. God's like, I don't even think God's mad. All these people talking about God's wrath on the earth, I think you have a different God than I have. I don't see God angry with the world. I just don't see that. I'm not sure he ever was. I think it was our perception that we were disconnected, we were alienated in our minds, and God came in the flesh as Jesus and fixed that for us. But I don't think it was ever his paradigm. Who told you were naked? Who told the earth that it was cursed? This is an outworking of your perception. To the pure in heart, all things are pure. If our heart does not condemn us, we have confidence before God. The accuser of the brethren is not the devil. It's your way of thinking. It's your conscience. You know? What's that? Or subconscious, yes. A lot of times your subconscious is... I was reading something this week about the subconscious. There's actually a science to it that if a thought isn't dealt with in about 30 seconds, it goes ahead and gets filed into your subconscious. That's why, if you ever had a dream and you're like, why the heck? This dream's so crazy. It's because there are things in your subconscious that you're... conscious brain is trying to make sense of. So as a director of some crazy play, it's pulling out these, like, maybe some kind of passing thought you had during the day, or you thought about somebody, then they appear in your dream that night. It's because you didn't process them, and so your subconscious, in trying to help you out, is saying, well, I'll hold this. And people don't realize they've gone through their whole life collecting all these misinterpretations of the world, and they think that's the way, you know, the world is, and they just don't, they have created a reality for that for them is real. I mean, psychosomatic diseases are real. They actually do hurt. People aren't just being negative. I mean, they actually feel, you know, the outworking of the wrong idea. So anyway, I want to leave you with that. I love Isaiah 55, and he's saying this will cause, that's a beautiful idea of the world. The mountains will burst forth into singing for you. Just something as simple, some people would not see this as miraculous. But a few weeks ago, I mean, since the first of the year, Ken's been staying in Eatonton during the week and comes here on the weekends. So the weekends have become extra important to us. You know, we, not that we took our time together for granted, but now it's like really special. So, you know, just driving up to Chattanooga is an easy thing to do. It's not far. It gives you the idea of getting out of town without having to go spend the night somewhere or whatever. So I said, let's get up tomorrow and let's drive back up to B's where, you know, we went in October. Let's go get some fried chicken, which I found out why that fried chicken is so good, by the way. And this is going to make some of you animal rights activists upset, but they get everything. There's a chicken place like right down the street from there. So everything that you're eating was running around a few hours ago. So that's why it's so fresh. Because I thought this is without a doubt the best fried chicken I've ever had, and it's because it's fresh. I mean, it's just, sorry to offend the vegans in here. It did kind of make me sad because this guy at our table was telling us all the stuff. He said, "Yeah, that chicken was running around about this time yesterday." I said, "Oh, I'm sad. Is that a leg?" It was so good. But anyway, it was cool because I grew up in Chattanooga area. I mean, we go there all the time. This couple was at, you know, you sit at these communal tables with the Lazy Susan. He was telling us all kind of stuff about places to go around there. How have I never heard of this? He said, "No, there's a place down here." Remember, he's telling us, like, he said, especially certain times of the year, you can't believe it's the most beautiful place you've ever driven through in the mountains and whatever. And I'm making a mental note of all this, like, I've never even heard of this. Well, that was something that's important to me. I mean, I love that kind of stuff. And I thought, wow, how fortuitous is it that we sit at this table and this guy's talking about stuff that I'm really interested in? I don't want to talk about politics. I don't want to talk about the Bible. I mean, I don't. I'm not, unless you have some revelation. I don't, because we're going to be about three. If you're like really into the Bible, I'm probably about three statements away from offending you. So I don't want to get into a thing with you. I just want to eat this freshly killed chicken and enjoy. And my point was, we went up there to see, you know, just to get a change of vision. And because that's what we were seeking, we actually get all this other information for future trips. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, that's whatever you're seeking, and you go with that attitude and the spirit of your mind, you actually attract even more stuff to yourself. You know what I mean? It's like, really? And again, without being redundant, this whole weekend has been that way. It's like everywhere we've gone, we've just there at the right time, right place, everything worked out. And even today, you know, you're not here by accident. Those of you that are watching online, you're not here by accident either. So think a better way and your life will be better. Got it? Stand up. It was good. I know you all know this, but we all need to be reminded of it. If you'll just remain standing, please, we're going to run this, and then I'll speak a blessing over you. And then you're going to go have a
contributing
day.
To Metron is quick and easy.
Easy peasy.
Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044.
So a treat doesn't
and
fall
now
on your
you
house.
Can give any time by texting this number. You
a
will
blessing
receive
on all your dogs.
Registration form that links
may
your
dogs
phone number
live long
and opens
and
your account at Simple Give. Complete the form, and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit visionthenow.com and click the support tab. Then, my online donation. When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment in Metron.
And if you have a check, make it to JESM, and Danny will be back there to receive it. And if you have cash, please pay it forward. Go bless somebody and circulate that money again. You are blessed. Your house is blessed.
Contributing to Metron is quick.
In case you didn't get that the first time, your dogs are blessed. Your dogs are going to live a good long time. I may eat chicken, but I haven't killed any dogs. And you have a beautiful day today. It's nice spring weather. Whether you believe in global warming or not, it's definitely warm. So get out there and enjoy it. Enjoy the springtime. Enjoy your, if you had to take a nap, let it be a good one. Fall into a deep sleep. I know I plan to. And get a good night's sleep tonight and a beautiful week. Go ahead and expect a beautiful week. I'm not saying there isn't stuff you have to deal with, but attract beauty and peace and grace into your life by the way that you're thinking, all right? If you're mad at somebody, let it go. It's not worth it. They're gonna end up ruining your week. So go ahead and let it go and think higher thoughts and the mountains will break forth you into joy and peace. And you wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. God bless you. Go in peace. Mwah. Don't forget to sign up for next Saturday. I'll see you Saturday.